It's that time of year when federal agency managers are dealing with three budgets at once. They're planning for the end of year 2012. They're awaiting Congress on the 2013 final budget. And they've started preparing submissions to the Office of Management and Budget for their 2014 budgets.
And we wanted to know about the latest thinking and best practices in budget preparation and financial management, especially in hard-to-predict times like these. Well, for some answers, we have two special guests joining us this morning. Owen Barwell is the Managing Director of Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton, and he recently retired as CFO of the Energy Department. And Nani Coloretti is the Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and Deputy Assistant Secretary for Management and Budget at the Treasury Department. It is great to have you both. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so let's go right to budget preparation before we get into some of the really big issues. But agencies are dealing with three budgets at once. That's kind of normal, but yet we don't seem to be in normal times. And so, Nani, why don't we start with you? What are some of the tough issues when you have sequestration and just total unknown about 2013 when you're trying to plan 2014?
Sure. So thanks for having me on the show, Tom. First of all, it is good to keep in mind that you're working with three different fiscal years and not freak out about that. What we do at Treasury and most departments that we are instructed to do, which is to start with the FY13 president's budget when you're planning for FY14. Now, the reality is that we do have information. Some of our bill has been marked up by the House and Senate side. And so we look at that to see what the variations might be. We, of course, don't know. And, you know, and for the past many fiscal years, there's not been a budget passed on time. So if what we try to do is actually just come up with a menu of options of savings in order to meet our target. And we kind of keep in mind the moving base here when we're doing that.
Because there's also a directive from OMB to do some cutting regardless of the sequestration and all the stuff that's going on in Congress. Just on its own, the administration was looking for some savings in the coming fiscal.
Correct. They were
for the fiscal beyond that.
That's right. So that was a 5% cut target, and because of the way they did their calculations for Treasury, it was really about a 3%. So we went and actually asked all of our bureaus to give a 3% and a 10% option. And the reason why we do the 10% option is, again, kind of keeping like a chunk of manageable menu of options for whatever may come with the base year. You may have to readjust and go back to your list of savings ideas.
Okay. And Owen, what's your experience been while you were a CFO in the federal government, but you've been in and out. And so maybe it's going from the rational world to the irrational. I don't know. I won't say which is which.
Either.
But what should agency managers be doing now? How should they handle this?
Well, I think it's in thinking about this, I think it is worth recognizing again that agencies, departments are used to managing three budgets at once. And we've seen trends of agencies, more progressive agencies, trying to move to multi-year budgets to ever increase their ability to plan and adapt what's happening in the federal budget space. But nevertheless, we do hear more and more that as we approach a new budget formulation year, that it's going to be a unique time. And I think that's pretty consistent over the last 5 or 6 years or so that I've been associated with in more detailed aspects of budgeting. And it's a little bit like boiling the frog. I get a sense that the ever increasing levels of uncertainty, the lack of flexibility, the ability to be somewhat agile in formulating a budget is becoming more and more restrictive. And so there is a mounting pressure, I think, on the budget community to be able to adapt and formulate a budget in this kind of environment.
Well, that's the first time I've heard that metaphor of boiling a frog, but I like it. Now, I have to ask you, it might be the new normal, but how does the threat of sequestration play into all of this?
Well, I think on several levels. So I think at the macro level, it's very much plays into this level of uncertainty again. Although I think what's been reported in the press, I think that there has been some finger pointing, some direction, some desire of the Congress to sort out this problem. I think we've seen some of that messaging change, particularly as I think yesterday was a bill from the House and the Senate looking for some transparency into the impacts of sequestration. I think now, at least publicly, folks are going to start working at the issue here. And it's not just sequestration. There are many other elements that constitute the fiscal cliff in the new year, including what we decide to do with extending tax cuts, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, again, it's a very challenging environment. The ability to deal in these times of uncertainty is the challenge to federal financial managers and budgeteers today.
And Nanny, from a department standpoint, even if you haven't worked out all the details of how sequestration could fall on Treasury, that must be impacting your workers.
Well, I mean, I remember we've gone through a little bit of this sort of hypothetical doomsday scenario planning, not necessarily sequestration, but we did do several rounds of lapse planning. And what Treasury did was we did that with all of the operational staff at the bureaus. And that was actually really helpful because what it means is people are getting around a table and thinking about, you know, what would happen if. And we did a couple of scenarios, one for whether we had a lapse in appropriations and one for whether there was, and this was a little harder and we didn't really pin this one down, but whether there was a debt ceiling breach because those are different scenarios. But that kind of planning, having people come around a table and think about those sorts of things, those are kind of developing the muscles for the type of sequestration planning that, we, quite frankly, we have not done. But, you know, there's a new bill that just is being sent to the president that is asking us to do that. So
when businesses ask their employees or their departments to do less, often there is less doing with less money. In the federal government, nobody ever takes away a mission or an activity. So as you go through the different components in Treasury and ask people for 5% and 10% scenarios, how does that play out with respect to the jobs that you have to do, which never seem to go away?
Sure. So, I mean, at least when you're looking at a 5 or 10%, you know, option scenario, people do come forward with, I cannot do this program or I won't do this one as much. The reality is that the good way to find cuts, and, you know, it's always arguable about how much you can find with this kind of thing, is, you know, we're, you know, in Treasury, we're looking to merge two bureaus, which reduces the entire back office of one of them. So I don't want to say the entire, but most of, part of. So I guess, you know, you have to, if it helps if you're building upon an analytical base of ideas where, you know, people are thinking about creatively, how do I actually do the same with less? That's where really the trick. And there are lots of ways to kind of look for that. And I think that helps with these 5 and 10% scenarios.
And Owen, in some place as far flung as energy, which has, you know, the labs, I mean, it's a very complicated kind of Byzantine setup as an agency because of all those components. How do budgets and missions balance?
Well, it is really quite challenging. I think with the sequester, one of the issues with the sequester is it's just arbitrary nature. You're having a blanket cut across federal spending, and that doesn't allow you to target where you want to take those cuts. And so if you take that down to the next level at an agency, when you receive guidance from OMB, for example, that is looking for a blanket cut, there are very even within an agency, there are programs that are mandatory in nature. There are the discretionary programs, the non-mandatory programs. That's also a very gray area too, because you have different stakeholders and constituents behind those programs. That if you choose to take a reduction in those programs, you're going to know about it from the Hill or OMB or other stakeholders or constituents. So the degree of discretionary expenditure at that local level is actually very, very, very small. And it's a challenge. And I think the way that OMB takes issues its guidance, it tries to tease out some intelligence as to where the agency can actually take some cuts. But it is a challenge because you're dealing with, again, mandatory requirements. But even in your discretionary spending, it's a very gray area as you're dealing with different stakeholders and constituents. But you know, you do your best analysis to figure out where you're going to get the maximum impact for the least amount of pain.
Of course, there's some politics over this, which we're not going to get into and not our purpose here. But you do have a bill in Congress that, you know, would force the president to tell Congress what sequestration would result in, you know, line by line. And then you have the administration saying, well, we can't tell you that because you won't tell us what 2013 is. So, of course, the federal manager can't deal with any of that. It's not their place, and they can't change that argument. So at the agency and operating level, do federal managers try to ignore that and simply go ahead with what they think are rational choices and let the politics take care of itself? Nani?
I think what you do is you start with so first of all, yes. I mean, if you're a rational federal manager and you've been doing budgeting for many years, I mean, the budget director at Treasury has – Bob Mahaffey's been doing federal budgeting for over 20 years. You basically – you're basically, first of all, kind of used to operating without a base year. That is like a normal, regular thing since we don't pass our bills on time and we don't operate with that kind of information. But the trick is to really have quantifiable solutions. So, again, irrespective of the base year, or you can hypothetically freeze your base year and say it's going to be X. The notion is to kind of think of quantifiable, scoreable savings off that base year. And I think that, to be quite honest, like there's a lot of talent out there in the agencies, and they know how to do this. It is not going to look pretty. You know, this to the extent that we figure out how to do a sequestration scenario, it's not going to look good. But it can be shown. And I think the talent is out there to do that and to do it in a way that mitigates as much as possible, you know, the pain that could be felt from that.
Our guests today are Owen Barwell, Managing Director of Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton, and Nani Coloretti, Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and Deputy Assistant Secretary of Management and Budget at the Treasury Department. This is a Federal News Radio discussion on financial management and budget planning. It's 9:17. We're going to take a short break. I'm Emily Kopp, along with Tom Temin. You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Civilian employees at the Defense Department could receive notices of potential layoffs 4 days before the election if automatic military cuts are not avoided as a result of the across-the-board cuts that kick in on January 2nd. Congress would be notified in mid-September and employees told about the loss of jobs 60 days before cuts. 800,000 civilians work for the Department of Defense. I'm J.J. Green.
911, what's your emergency?
Every day, EADS North America supports Homeland Security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Whether it's responding to emergencies or disasters, providing military helicopters, or systems that patrol and secure our borders and coastlines, EADS North America delivers on our promises every day. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Profile America, Friday, July 27th. The world's most prestigious sporting event, the Olympics, opens today in London for the 30th time in the modern era. Held every 4 years, this year's Olympics will see athletes from an estimated 205 nations take part. Among the 26 official sports, some 300 events will be featured. Tonight's opening ceremony is expected to be viewed by 4 billion people around the world. One of the most popular televised events is gymnastics. In the 2008 Olympics, the U.S. won 2 gold medals, 11 silver and 7 bronze in gymnastics. In the U.S., there are 17 men's college gymnastic teams and 83 teams for women. You can find more facts about America's people, places, and economy from the American Community Survey at census.gov.
This afternoon between 3 and 7 on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week, selected by Jonathan Bruhl and John Palguda. If you're going to look at sequestration, do it realistically. Budget expert Richard Kogan will help you this afternoon. That and lots more on In Depth with Francis Rose, 3 to 7 this afternoon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Good morning, 920 Well, and welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on financial management and budget planning. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp, and our guests today are Owen Barwell, Managing Director of Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton and former CFO of the Energy Department, and Nani Coloretti, the Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and Deputy Assistant Secretary Management and Budget at the Treasury Department.
And agencies have already started planning for fiscal 2014, even though the 2013 budget is far from done and signed into law. The Office of Management and Budget has told agencies that they're going to have to cut their budgets by 5%, even if there's no such thing as sequestration come January. So, Nani, I want to ask you, just tell me a little bit about the Treasury Department. What are the management priorities that you're going to be setting out in this budget, and where is that 5% going to come from?
Sure. So we have had a longstanding priority to increase paperless transactions. And that has actually been a multi-year effort at Treasury. You know, all the bills of the federal government come through Treasury except for the ones going through the Defense Department. So it is paying Social Security benefits. It's paying Medicare payments and so forth. So we have done a multi-year effort under Dick Gregg, who I understand was on your show a little bit earlier this week.
Yes, he was.
And that's fantastic because he has been working with two of our bureaus to increase paperless transactions. That sort of is an umbrella over which we've instructed several bureaus to kind of come up with ideas to do that and as a result also reduce paperwork burden. So we're now looking at places where, you know, we're doing electronic payments, we're doing paperless bond transactions. You can now file your permit with Treasury, the bureau that does, you know, wine labeling. You can file that online. And that's actually saved money. And the way that that saves money is you actually don't need to be doing all of that paper processing. You're saving on mailing, and then you can start to restructure your workforce. And that's really where the real dollars come, and that's why it's been a, you know, multi-year effort. So we're in the process of actually closing down some of our field offices out there, and that's saving on rent. And the IRS is also doing a multi-year process on saving space and so forth. So our management priorities remain the same, which is really look for operational efficiencies first, because, you know, we have 100,000 employees at the Treasury Department, and if you can find operational savings in how we interact with those employees, our use of telework, our use of space, that can actually result in some really decent-sized dollars. And so that's one area. And then the other thing we're doing is focusing on shared services. So we've created a kind of council across all of the bureaus of the deputy commissioners, deputy directors of those bureaus, and we're looking for ways to use enterprise solutions to not have everybody in the business of buying everything one by one by one. And that is actually going to yield savings, too. And these are multi-year efforts. So what helps is that we started that a couple of years back. And so we're hopeful that FY14 is the year in which we finally get some bang for our buck. And that's been helpful.
I think you were thinking of the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau. I always confuse that one with ATF when I see the first couple of words. But it is a different agency.
They used to be part of ATF. And then when Homeland Security was created, ATF went that way.
And Owen, Grant Thornton just did a survey of CFOs sort of looking at some of these same issues. So, you know, 5% cuts, whether or not sequestration happens or not, that's what OMB wants to hear from departments. Have they already trimmed all the fat in years of sort of hearing the same guidance over and over again?
That's a good question. And again, I think as we approach every budget formulation year, we describe it as unique. And having gone through the experience a few times, we also describe it as somewhat entertaining as well. So let me just preface this with, budgeting is really an art and not a science. It's unlike financial management where we produce financial statements that are audited. It's a different, it really is an art to creating a budget. And by way of an example, let me just give you a sense of what happens at DOE, at the Department of Energy. We were challenged with taking out some funding from DOE, 5%, 10% decrement targets for FY13. But when you understand what the Department of Energy does, we maintain the nation's nuclear weapons stockpile. So that's a national defense issue. We also clean up from our environmental impacts of winning the Cold War. Now, that cleanup activity is in a couple of states predominantly, and those states have senators that are key players on the Senate Appropriations Committee. We spend a lot of money in our national labs on science and technology, and we finally get to some of the things that are important in terms of new technologies for energy. And so when you look at all of those activities, they play to presidential and national priorities, national security, science and technology, job creation, energy. And so it becomes a real challenge that when you're being asked to cut certain expenditures, certain levels of funding, that you're actually flying in the face of presidential and national policies and priorities. So I think but what this does, though, is really sort of figure out, helps the political executives, the civil service executives, figure out what the priorities are and figure out where the level of emphasis should be, and conversely to that, where the level of de-emphasis should be. And I think, as the civil servants, we're responsible for formulating that budget, running the analysis, and making recommendations, and then pretty much hand it over to the political leadership to and all the argy-bargy that they go through to settle in on some numbers. So I think it's been a challenge in the last 4 or 5 years. We're with no doubt, there are some areas that have really been trimmed to the bone, and particularly in the mission support areas. And I think the opportunity is in the mission side. But again, that's really challenging and requires sure. The political leadership to be able to be willing to give things up.
It's 9:28. Our guests today are Owen Barwell, Managing Director of Global Sector of the Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton, Nani Colaretti, Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and Deputy Assistant Secretary of Management and Budget at the Treasury Department. This is a Federal News Radio discussion on financial management and budget planning. Lots more after the short break. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7222.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Accenture, high performance delivered. It's how we help clients take on their most complex challenges. We consolidated more than 100 defense financial systems into one, and we helped eliminate $348 million in U.S. federal fleet, inventory, and freight costs. As a partner with both defense and industry knowledge, Accenture is uniquely equipped to help you accomplish your missions. Accenture, high performance delivered. To learn more, visit Accenture.com/federal.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. The NIH and the EPA are challenging the public to build a sensor that will help researchers, physicians, and communities better understand how the environment and health are connected. Dr. David Balshaw at the NIH explains the goal.
Can we develop a single package that's very wearable, very unobtrusive, takes advantage of the kind of modern technologies, the smartphones that we have, to link what people are exposed to and how it affects their breathing or their heart rate, skin temperature, conductance, as they have a physiological response to their environment?
Learn more about the My Air, My Health competition at www.challenge.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on financial management and budget planning. It's 9:32. I'm Emily Kopp along with Tom Temin. Our guests are Owen Barwell, Managing Director of Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton and the former CFO of the Energy Department, and Nani Colaretti. She's Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and Deputy Assistant Secretary of Management and Budget at the Treasury Department.
All right, beyond the budgeting process itself, Nani, there's also the issue of financial management on an ongoing basis. And you might think, I guess people probably take that to be just bean counting and nothing routine or all routine, but actually there's less routine about it than people realize. And it does run in terms of trends and best practices. And so I wanted to ask you what you're seeing in terms of the best approach these days, and not only for CFOs, but also for program people who have to operate under a budget. How can they work together with the CFO people and maybe even the contracting people? What's best practices these days?
Sure. So I like to think that Treasury is doing some best practices. We are really taking a data-driven and analytical approach to budget execution. And what that means is we are now able to get data every 2 weeks, after every pay period, basically, on our entire payroll. And we've developed some data analytics tools to make that really easy to understand as you compare to what you thought you were going to spend. And so we have been doing kind of a deep dive on that for the headquarters because some of the capability is there. You should know that at departmental offices, which is the bureau kind of in D.C. for Treasury, we have an enterprise system called HR Connect that connects up to every bureau at Treasury for their payroll. So we have data feeds and we can do an analysis for every bureau on where their spend is and where they thought they were going to be on all their labor. And then we can subsequently also pull things out of the contracting system to look at where they're executing at. That's a little harder to do because, as Owen knows, you know, when you're contracting, you have sort of it's not as regular of a spend pathway as personnel is. So that is just giving people information. And we have found that when you do that, whether you're in the program side or the budget side or procurement or wherever you are, that is incredibly helpful and powerful tool to decide what you want to do mid-year or what you want to do now about your spend.
Now, I can imagine that having sort of those data analytics for the first time could be sort of like somebody waking up and having to take a cold shower, an unpleasant surprise. So
a shower of data.
So when people were faced with this for the first time, was it a big surprise to them compared to what they thought they were going to see in those numbers?
Yes. I mean, look, some people were tracking what they do by not linking to what we call our core financial system. So they were like, hey, my spreadsheet says I should be over here. And so we had to have these conversations with folks about, you know, well, where is the information on your spreadsheet? And it's basically like I counted how many staff I had and kind of projected out, you know, what I think their payroll is. And we're like, okay, well, you know, so we've pulled this from like the money that went out the door last, you know, Friday. and so we're going to go with our numbers, but let's look at where the differences are and where you think you might be. And actually, that is a very helpful dialogue because, as Owen knows, you know, you have a lot of different kinds of funding. So what we ended up finding out from that process was where they thought staff were being billed towards, they were not. They were actually being billed towards some other funding stream and it was wrong. So actually, you can find some mistakes there and catch it. And it's a kind of process, but I think people have realized and they're actually happy now to have some data that's real and coming from the money out the door system.
Yeah. I once worked for a publisher who kept all of the financial and sales information on this gigantic folding sheet. It was about this half the size of the wall. He would unfold it because he never trusted the information coming from corporate. And I guess, Owen, in the consulting that you do with federal agencies, that must be an issue, not only just giving them data, but timely data and data that they can believe in. Because otherwise, it's either too late or they just don't trust it.
That's right. That's a common sentiment when trying to implement new change initiatives. I think one of the positive outcomes of the current budgetary environment we're actually in is that there is not just an imperative, but an increasing desire of the programmatic communities to actually work with the CFO function. I think that that desire and that imperative have been increasing more recently. At the department, to your point on looking at data, it was somewhat of a throwaway and crass line, but my observation was we tended to understand the budget of everything and the cost of nothing. And in these, again, in these economic times, increasing pressure to cut funding, understanding the cost of things also became an imperative. And if you look at the system that we have set up right now on the budget formulation side, we start with what we did last year, and then we look for some sort of increase or decrease from that number. Well, in one of the things that I believe we should be focusing on is understanding our cost base a great deal more. And a very simple example under that framework, if we were for example, in 1995, budgeting $1,500 for a PC, the general framework incentivizes you to take $1,500 and add 2 or 3% every year. So we may actually be having a PC budgeted at a couple of grand these days. And what we should be doing is looking at cost data. But that's a real challenge because, again, the emphasis here, the incentives are all on understanding the budget. But the CFO can play an integral role in understanding what things actually cost and using data, putting some energy to that data to turn it into information and put it in the hands of decision makers to help them manage their programs and operations more effectively. But as Nani points out, that's always a challenge when you're actually given the data and information to help you manage your organization. You may not actually like what you're seeing.
Owen Barwell is Managing Director of the Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton. And we're also joined by Nani Coloretti, Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and Deputy Assistant Secretary of Management and Budget at the Treasury Department. You're listening to a Federal News Radio discussion on financial management and budget planning. It's 9:39. We'll have lots more after this short break. I'm Emily Kopp along with Tom Temin on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is a transformative time for the Department of Defense. The military is progressing toward a smaller, nimbler force capable of rapidly responding to any threat around the globe. Secure, next-generation communications capabilities are essential, ensuring personnel can get the information they need from virtually any location, anytime, on any compatible device. Microsoft offers today's military leaders the next wave of technologies, providing advanced security features without compromising productivity and mission effectiveness, all at a price that makes sense. From the front lines to the command center to the Pentagon, Microsoft and its global partner network are working with defense leaders to create solutions that not only meet but anticipate today's service member needs. Whether it's providing secure online collaboration and editing capabilities or voice and video through unified communications, Microsoft is equipping warriors in motion with the familiar technology they use every day to get the job done. That's real impact for tomorrow's military. Learn more about defense IT solutions at Microsoft.com/DOD.
Time is running out. Congress has until September 30th to pass agency spending bills for 2013. What's the latest on your agency's funding? How much will your budget be cut? And how will sequestration play a role? FederalNewsRadio.com's budget tracker has the latest on the 12 annual appropriations bills. Follow your agency's funding as it makes its way through the House and Senate and to President Obama's desk. Find the budget tracker online at FederalNewsRadio.com. Search budget tracker.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Pat Poynter, Deputy Comptroller for HR in the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and she's one of this year's winners of Federal News Radio's Causey Awards.
So many of our employees have only been at the OCC. They have been there for 20 and 25 and 30 years. To me, that speaks volumes of the agency. It was the leadership of the agency that so inspired me, that really attracted me.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
9:41, and welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on financial management and budget planning. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp. Our guest today here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, Nani Colaretti, Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and Deputy Assistant Secretary for Management and Budget at the Treasury Department, and Owen Barwell, Managing Director for the Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton and former CFO of the Energy Department. And Owen, I wanted to continue on that theme that you mentioned before the break about the difference between understanding budget and cost, because my understanding is once you know your costs better, then you are in a better position as a program person, maybe with the help from finance, to assess the risks to your program. And that's really what it's all about, right?
That's right. And I think by understanding your cost base, you're also able to understand where best to apply resources, which helps you mitigate risk. And if you think about risk, I had the good fortune of working at NASA for 3 or 4 years in my as part of my career. And that as an organization understands how to run programs and projects. And a key component of understanding how well your project is going is an understanding of risk. And I've taken some of that mission programmatic risk assessment into my organizations as a federal CFO organizations to think about. You think about risk, its definition really is it's the opportunity or the for hazard. And so as we think through what are the likelihood of these hazards, what are the consequences of these hazards, it helps us inform decisions around operations, which includes the budget. A very simple example that I've used in the past is for a federal CFO, retaining an unqualified audit opinion is almost an imperative these days. The vast majority of cabinet-level agencies have an unqualified audit opinion. If one were to lose it, then that would mean it would be a different life for the role of the CFO in that particular organization. And so as we kicked off our audit season with our Inspector General and our CPA firm at KPMG, we, as a management team, leadership team, sat down and started to think about what were the hazards associated with our audit, what were their likelihood, what were their consequences, and to identify those that really were high consequence and high likelihood so we could apply resources in that direction to try and reduce or mitigate the risks associated with losing our unqualified audit opinion. And so I think this is an extension of moving from budgeting to really understanding and connecting the dots across masses of amount of data that usually the CFO has pretty good access to, and then starting to look ahead, look through the windshield instead of in the rearview mirror at some of the things that could go wrong. You know, what are the financial risks? What are the enterprise risks that might actually prevail against your organization?
And then when you lay on sort of the financial, the environment that we're in right now, do either of you feel that agencies or NANI, that the Treasury Department, you're taking less risk or willing to take less risk now than perhaps, I don't know, several years ago? Or are there opportunities to take perhaps more risk out of necessity?
So Treasury is a pretty risk-averse place. So I don't think there's any movement to take on any more risk at the Treasury Department. You know, in general, I think the main point to think about here is that, you know, using data to make decisions and using data to kind of assess where you are is a great thing. We have more tools than ever before to do that. So I think that that can happen in a quicker turnaround time in real time. And if you're a program or a financial manager somewhere in the midst of the agency, you can actually get information that helps you do that.
Yeah, because you're sort of stat freaks there. And tell us how that works, the tech stat sessions.
Right. So these are quarterly performance reviews that have kind of popped up all across the federal government. You know, several departments were doing them. You know, they come from cities, to be quite honest, and police departments. And it is taking a data-centered approach to making decisions. So when Dan Tangerlini got to Treasury and he came, you know, he's had some federal experience but came from a city. I also came from the city of San Francisco. We sort of brought those tools to Treasury. And what we do is we have bureaus come in every quarter. They sit down with me and the deputy secretary, and they bring program managers. They also bring folks from across their operation to talk about talk around a set of goals and initiatives using data to see how well they're doing towards those goals and initiatives. And that has been very helpful on a number of fronts to you know, both bring down costs and manage the agency better, but while still accomplishing the mission.
And do you find that sometimes during those sessions, people maybe slap their forehead and said, "I'll be darned"?
Not publicly in the room there, but they do. There is a very healthy dialogue back and forth, and it is analytical. And so that's, you know, so if you're a policy analyst at heart or budget analyst at heart like me, it's a fantastic way to get the very highest levels of leadership who are accountable for these programs and for these outcomes to have a conversation around data that helps them decide whether they want to move in a different direction or not.
Our guests today are NANI Colaretti. She's Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and Deputy Assistant Secretary for Management and Budget at the Treasury Department, and Owen Barwell, Managing Director for Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton. This is a Federal News Radio discussion on financial management and budget planning. Lots more after the short break. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp, here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show. Tune in next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 a.m. to hear the latest from the food and wine scene. We've got celebrity chefs, sommeliers, winemakers, and more all here to tell you about the inside skinny that you won't find anywhere else. That's Foodie and the Beast this Sunday at 11.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Hey,
welcome to Best Buy. Looking for anything in particular?
Yeah, I've been using the Insignia HD radio portable player at the gym.
Sweet, that's a great little radio for listening to HD2, HD3 channels.
Right, I want something similar at home. I paid $49 for the portable.
Oh, this just in, the Insignia HD radio table radio, the HD Rad.
Really? How much?
$49.99, just like your portable. And you can take it with you, like to the beach. It totally runs on batteries.
Okay, dude, you got me.
HD radio. More radio, more value.
Every day, hundreds of dogs, puppies, cats, and kittens become homeless in our region, suffering from neglect, abuse, hoarding situations, and victims of illegal puppy mills. These innocent animals who want a home and a loving family are at risk, but now you can help. Join the Washington Animal Rescue League for their second annual Adopt-a-thon on Saturday, August 11th from noon till 5 at their state-of-the-art facility located at 71 Oglethorpe Street in Northwest D.C. More than 150 rescued dogs, puppies, cats, and kittens that need forever homes will be available for adoption. They're offering pay-what-you-will adoption fees to allow everyone an opportunity to adopt. Their veterinarians will answer questions at the Ask the Vet table, and their certified dog trainers will host demonstrations, and area pet-friendly organizations will be on site with goodies for everyone. Meet your perfect match Saturday, August 11th from noon till 5. Visit warl.org/adopt. Adopt-a-thon.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
9:51, you're listening to a Federal News Radio discussion on financial management and budget planning. I'm Emily Kopp, along with Tom Temin. Our guests are Owen Barwell, Managing Director of Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton, and the former CFO of the Energy Department, and Nani Colaretti. She's Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and Deputy Assistant Secretary of Management and Budget at the Treasury Department. And here on Federal News Radio, we report a lot on issues of federal pay and sequestration. Will it happen? Will it not? And it's affecting the federal workforce. We know from surveys we've done that morale is low. So as you're going into what is likely to be an even tighter budget process than before, after years of doing this, how do you motivate your workforce to do it? And how do you tackle that problem collectively as a team?
So I guess I would say, you know, there is that saying, may you live in interesting times. And if you work on the budget right now, this is like the best time to be the federal government. It may not feel like that, and it may feel personally difficult as you have a pay freeze and no bonus. And however, this is a call to action. I mean, we're going to need everybody, program managers, budget people, financial people, to give their very best and their very highest sets of information to help the federal government as a whole navigate its way through tricky, tricky finances. And I have to say, when I left San Francisco, we had come through an incredible, you know, 20% cut off of our budget, several rounds of layoffs. The people who delivered on finding ways to do our mission without, you know, really hurting people that we were trying to deliver mission for came through with really incredibly creative ideas. And so I think it's an exciting time to be a part of this. And it actually calls upon federal workers in a way that is critical and will be very exciting, I think, over the next year.
And as a manager, are you doing pep rallies? I mean, what do you actually do to sort of, you know, not let people get down so much?
Shiny,
it's easy
new
to do.
$2 bills, maybe.
I think you just you just say thank you a lot. I mean, I really enjoy working with people who want to do this work. I think people come to the federal government because they believe in its mission. And we are being called upon to help deliver the mission at lower cost. So, you know, we we basically, we don't do a, I want to say a big pep rally, but we do talk to people and we listen all the time. And I think that makes it a more fun and kind of interesting place to work. And you can really get the highest and best use of people's brain cells. And I think people like that.
Yeah, no, and how can financial people who maybe are seen as dry, although we find federal finance exciting here, but how can you as a manager also work with them and the numbers to make sure that people are with the program? And because these are tough times and you want people to be enthusiastic about what they're doing, even if sometimes they get a lot of critique from all sides.
That's a good question. Like Nani, I have a couple of quotes here, too, both from Winston Churchill. The first one being, Winston said, Americans always do the right thing, but only after exhausting all other opportunities. It's a little like that right now in the environment that we're in. And lest I don't make it out of the building in one piece, he was also quoted as saying, never, never, never give up. And I think in this environment, we kind of accept some of the craziness that's going on, the fact that it is very uncertain and very volatile. But as professionals and executives, we really got to keep plowing on and keep morale up. And I think for again, despite everything, this is a really good opportunity for the federal CFO and financial management community. As I mentioned earlier, I think there is an ever increasing imperative, but also a desire from the programmatic community to work for the CFO. They just have to do it. And so I think the CFOs and the federal financial management and budgeting communities should be responsive to that and really guide their agencies through these particularly tough times.
All right, Nani, we'll give you the last word in about 45 seconds for people that are preparing budgets that they want to be pass-back proof and OMB proof and Senate and House proof. What should people be doing right now?
I think it's always good to think about how you want to deliver your core mission while taking into account all of the conflicting needs of OMB, of your Hill appropriators. And, you know, it's okay to not be passback proof, but it's also a good idea, I think, to turn in real savings and to turn in real ideas that are going to make your agency operate more effectively, efficiently.
Well, that brings our discussion to a close, and we'd like to thank our guests, Owen Barwell, Managing Director of Global Public Sector at Grant Thornton and the former Chief Financial Officer at the Energy Department, and Nani Coloretti, Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and Deputy Assistant Secretary of Management and Budget at the Treasury Department. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.